Do fathers matter? Our guest in science, say yes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk about the various scientific studies and what they have shown about the effects fathers of all species have had on their children. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions. What effect do you think your father had on you and who you are today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Paul Rayburn, science writer, contributing to the New York Times, Discover, Scientific American, and the Huffington Post. He writes the About Fathers blog for Psychology Today and is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. Good morning.
Good morning. I just been doing a little parenting. I just dropped my son off at camp early so he could make it back for the show.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate that. So why did you decide to look into the importance of fathers specifically?
Well, considering that I have five kids, that's probably that's at least five reasons right there. Partly it was personally motivated. Partly it came off of my previous book, which was called Acquainted with the Night, which was about raising children with depression and bipolar disorder. And once I was done with that book, I was still interested in fathers, and I wanted to take a broader look. And the question I had was, what do fathers contribute to their children? You know, we have a lot of ideas and notions in our heads about what fathers do, but I wanted to look at the science and find out what they really do.
And a lot of times there is that notion out there that, well, you know, certainly you contributed some DNA, but maybe your other contributions as fathers are overlooked or underappreciated.
Right. Well, that was my concern. I didn't really know until I started to look into the research. I didn't know whether I'd discovered that the DNA contribution is pretty much it. That's certainly true for most mammals, which are the animals that are close relatives. You know, see a lot of outstanding fathers among most of those species. There are some exceptions. So that was the question. And, you know, the answer is that, I mean, in short, so this is, I should ask everybody to buy the book to find out the answer. But of course, the answer is yes, fathers do matter. Quite a lot. And I was really stunned by how much research has been done about how important fathers are for their kids. The problem is all of this research has been published in journals that even science writers like me don't see. So that was, you know, that's a problem for all of us who'd like to know more about fathers and families. It was an opportunity for me to do a book to spread that news.
Yeah, and there is some really, really interesting research that has occurred that I had not heard about. You looked at research starting with a father's benefits during pregnancy, not just contributing the DNA, but actually as the woman is pregnant. What good are dads at that point?
Well, this is you're right. You've hit on the right thing. If there was any time in the saga of fatherhood that we thought fathers were on the sidelines, it would be during their partner's pregnancy, because what can they do? After all, they have not only can they not do anything, they haven't met this tiny group of cells that's developing in their partner's body. And so the question is, what's going on? It turns out, and we know that women undergo all kinds of hormonal changes for pregnancy, and that makes sense. You know, they're taking on a very specific biological job, and they have to prepare for that. It turns out that fathers undergo all kinds of hormonal changes too, and one of the most important is they experience a significant drop in testosterone. Now, our old friend testosterone, who gets bandied about a lot, is we know associated with competition among men and aggressiveness, and you know, you don't want to overdraw that case, but it is associated with that kind of behavior. Those are not necessarily the behaviors you want in the father of a newborn infant. So what happens is the testosterone falls, another hormone called prolactin, which is associated with nursing in women, that rises in men. And a series of other shifts take place And the idea is that biology is preparing men to be fathers. So they'll be less aggressive, more nurturing, more available to their children, and so forth. So it's one of those things that, you know, nobody suspected anything like that until somebody took a look, and they were surprised to discover that all this was happening.
And talk some about how the father contributes to a child's health. What science tells us about that? Like, well, for instance, the age of the father.
About older fathers?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a shift to another subject that I wrote quite a bit on. And I'm an older father myself. I have three of my kids are grown, and I have two young boys in a second marriage. And so older fathers have benefits and problems that they bring to their children. The benefits are many older fathers are, sort of more established, often more financially secure. Their relationships may be more established. Relationship with their spouse may be more solid, more long-lasting. And various things like that contribute to, allow fathers to spend more time with their children, contribute to more financial stability for the kids, and a lot of things that are good for children. So there are some good things about older fathers. There are lots of good things about older fathers. But what was interesting in terms of the science was some of the problems. So we know, many of us know that as women get older, they face an increased risk of having a child with Down syndrome. And there's no cutoff point exactly where they have no risk and then the next year they have the significant risk. It just gradually increases with age. And so women prepare for that. They plan for that. They're aware of it. Some couples are tested to see whether their fetus is afflicted with Down syndrome. And so it's standard part of medical practice. Well, it turns out that as fathers age, their children have an increased risk of Down syndrome. That's similar to that in mothers. Nobody knows about that. At least people I've talked to are always surprised to hear that. I was certainly surprised to discover it. And even more, the children of older fathers have an increased risk of autism, and the children of older fathers have an increased risk of schizophrenia. So these are serious illnesses, and this is now clearly established by all kinds of studies. People have looked at the genes. So it was a couple of years ago, there was a big study out of Iceland where they got genetic samples, DNA samples from, a large segment of the population. And they this seems to be a very solid connection. There are a few people who don't quite buy it, but most scientists think that there is a risk associated with older fathers. Now,
is that because of some sort of, mutation of the sperm, or what's the belief?
You're on the right track. Excuse me. So in women, the explanation is that, women are born with all the eggs they will ever have, and that those eggs age over time and are not quite as functional. So that's what's going on there. So with men, that was thought not to be true because sperm are manufactured regularly and fresh, and they don't age. But it turns out what ages is the sperm-making machinery. So there are what are called spermatogonia that produce sperm, and as with the eggs in women, the spermatogonia age over time. So that's the thinking about why this happens. Now, the thing I always like to add in this discussion is I really think men should be aware of this, older men should be aware of this when they make their decisions about having children, and I think it's a failure of the genetic counseling community and the medical community that most men don't know anything about this until after they've decided to have children. So that's point number one. Men should know and have the option to make an informed decision. Point number two is these risks, while they're important and they're significant, they're not so important, most doctors say, that men should make all their decisions based on this. So there are many, many complicated things that go into what we decide with regard to having children. And for older men, this should be one of them. It shouldn't necessarily trump every other concern or issue or question that an older father has when he's deciding whether to have a child.
Well, and as the offspring of a 46-year-old father, I think, when I was born. And my dad was awesome. And I don't have autism or schizophrenia or any of those other things.
That's good to know.
Yeah. But just to put in a word for older fathers. But what I was also really interested in reading is that my dad might have had a whole lot to do with my language, with how I speak and my vocabulary. Talk about that.
So he might be have a lot to do with how well you do at your job.
Right, exactly. Right.
So yes, there is something to that. There's a lot to it. So we know that in families where the parents are more educated, the kids are going to have bigger vocabularies and a little more language development. That's not a surprise. But there was a group at the University of North Carolina that wanted to look at mother's contributions versus father's contributions. So they spent some time in middle-class families looking at how mothers behaved with their kids, how they spoke to their infants. So we're talking, I think the first assessment was at 15 months. So language, you know, is beginning to happen at that age. And they looked at how fathers interacted with their kids. And the guess was that that mothers would have more influence on language development, because even with all the change in work life that families have experienced in the last decade or two, in a lot of families, mothers still spend more time with the children. So it seemed logical that they would be more important. What the researchers found was exactly the opposite, that fathers had a significant effect on children's language development. Fathers tended to use a larger vocabulary, not that they have a larger vocabulary than mothers, they just used a larger vocabulary with the kids. And there was a strong correlation between the kind of vocabulary the fathers used with the kids and the kids' language development. And then they went back to mothers. They said, okay, well, mothers must have something going on. And in this kind of study, looking at it this way, they found zero correlation between mothers and kids' language development. And this is important for a lot of things, not only to get jobs on Wisconsin Public Radio, but also kids who have better language development when it comes time to start school. They can easier transition to school. They do better in elementary school. They have fewer behavioral problems. And this also ties into the pregnancy that we talked about. Fathers who are close to their partners during their partner's pregnancy, those kids also do better in elementary school, simply as a result of the connection with pregnancy. So language is a great way to look at how kids are developing, and it turns out fathers contribute a lot, and this was no surprise.
I just want to clarify that. So the father speaking with the partner while the partner is pregnant is correlated with how well that child is speaking?
Not language development per se during pregnancy. So the language development is looking at the young kids, as we discussed. Yeah. But closeness during pregnancy between the two partners is also correlated with better performance in elementary school. So I'm not doing a very good job of painting the picture, but during pregnancy, you know, we have the hormonal shifts in men, and the closeness between men and women is also doing something to set up those kids for better performance in elementary school already. And then when those kids are born, their experience with their father and their father's vocabulary, you know, enhances that. So it's sort of a picture of, as kids, you know, develop in the womb, as they're born, as they go to school, there's a continual father influence that grows and becomes even more important.
And I get it now. And because Daddy wasn't talking like I was a little adult, maybe, and not using baby talk, using big words rather than, I don't know, pee-pee or something. And mothers tend to do more of that. That's why dads have big part in a child's...
Yeah, that's right. And the thinking is that because mothers often spend more time with the kids, they tune in better to what words the kids know. So they will adapt and adjust to the words the kids know. Fathers may be less tuned into that and therefore use a broader vocabulary, not trying to stump their children with words they don't know, but just, you know, speaking closer to how they would speak normally to another adult. And the kids get pulled along by that. They hear those words and they begin to figure them out, and their language develops more quickly.
Very neat. We are talking with Paul Rayburn. He is the author of What Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. And we are talking about the science of fatherhood and what science says about the impact, the effects fathers have on their children. And there are many. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming any experiences that you might want to share. What effect do you think your father had on you and who you are today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think that dads have been overlooked and underappreciated when it comes to a child's development? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dads are overlooked and underappreciated, according to our guest and according to science. We are talking with Paul Rayburn. He is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. And we're welcoming your questions for him about what science tells us about what fathers contribute to the development of their children. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones. We have Ann in Madison with us first. Hello, Ann.
Hi. Well, I agree that fathers are really important. They contribute to the security of the child, and they're, whether they're articulate or not is really important. But to say that I don't know who was in this study, but to say that mothers don't contribute to the articulateness of the kids, I think is just plain wrong. Many single mothers bring up children all by themselves, and their children usually turn out to have roughly the same level of ability to express themselves as the children of couples. So I just don't think that's true, because mothers are with their kids usually more, and people remember the little aphorisms their mothers told them when they were tiny children. I just think the constant sort of banter between mother and child is, I think that's really important, and I agree that fathers are absolutely essential. And kids who grow up without them sometimes do have resentment and problems. But I don't think that mothers don't influence, their children's ability to express themselves.
Paul, you want to clarify that? The mother has no influence on the language?
I mean, you're right. If we took this to the ultimate extreme, and children of single mothers wouldn't be able to talk at all, right? They don't have a father, they never learn to talk. And clearly that's not the case. So the idea is that, when I say that mothers tune into their kids' vocabulary and maybe don't use as broad a vocabulary, that doesn't help language development in the way that fathers do, but it obviously helps tenderness and connection with the child and all those things. So there are a lot of things going on at the same time. So you're absolutely right. Children of single mothers grow up and do learn to talk. But, looking at these very young kids, this is between 15 months and 3 years old. So this is not the time when they're, not so much the time when they're remembering, little tips and words of wisdom their parents gave them. They're a little young for that yet. But, looking at it scientifically, there was a difference and fathers were more important. Now, this is not to say that we dismiss mothers. It's just to say that nobody recognized father's role in that, and now we do.
Thanks, Ann, for the call. Ann talked a little bit about how, maybe children that grow up without a father present have some problems or have resentment. Can you tell us what science says about that?
Well, I don't know that I can say so much about problems or resentment. That's a little bit different and didn't feel like it felt part of a book on fathers. But I can say that I think Do Fathers Matter will be very important for mothers, particularly single mothers. And the reason is, I can just tell a little anecdote of a good friend of mine at my children's elementary school one of the other parents is a single mother, and she came up to me when she heard that I was working on this book and said, well, what do I have to know? What should I do as a single mother? And that's exactly the right question. So, you know, I'm showing here in this book many, many ways in which fathers contribute to their kids a lot more than we'll be able to talk about this morning. And the question for single mothers is, you know, do they want to know about that? Do they want to find out about that? And what can they do to compensate for that? So there are a lot of things I think single mothers and any mothers can learn about raising children by looking at Do Fathers Matter and what fathers contribute. And for single mothers, one of the bits of advice that Kyle Pruitt at Yale and other experts in this field will give is that single mothers would do well to involve a male figure in their children's lives. So that could be a brother or an uncle or a cousin or a neighbor or a close friend. Whoever it is, if a male figure is involved, that person can do some of the things that a father in the home would do. Not all of them, it's not quite the same, but that's one piece of good advice among many that I put in the book for single mothers that I hope will be helpful.
Let's go next to Nick in Madison. Hello, Nick.
Hi, this is really interesting. I guess I've seen probably the exact results of what your guest is saying. I truly remember never talking to my kids like they were babies. I always talked to them like they were my little friends, and they still are. Now they're 18, 19, 22, all doing very well. One studying for the MCAT, one going to nursing school, one was on the dean's list. My comment is, I think dads talk to the kids differently. A dad needs to be there, but I got another thing I'd like studied. We were unable to breastfeed, so I was very, you know, in the rotation every night, making a bottle at 2 o'clock in the morning when my turn came up. And I want to say, for all the push for breastfeeding, if you can't and you bottle feed, or if you pump and have, get the dad out there for sure at 2 in the morning, because I feel I really bonded with my kid at 2 in the morning. I think in the silence and the dark of the living room, that's something that's never mentioned. You know, the dad's always pushed off to the side. The baby smells mama and says, I want mama. But my kid's bonded with two adults, and I don't think you can really, how can you beat that? And I'd like that research. I think it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you. Any research with that, Paul?
Well, there's a lot of research that shows that a warm and a close relationship between fathers and kids is important in all kinds of ways. And you mentioned your kids doing well in school, Nick, and that's certainly a sign of that. That must have been true in elementary school and middle school as well, I'm guessing. And partly you do deserve the credit for that, for making sure that you spend time with them. You know, I remembered as I was writing the book one particular incident with one of my kids where I had a big meeting or something the next day, and he woke up, and my wife fed him, and he wouldn't go back to sleep. And I said, I'll get up with him, you know, and just try to, until he's ready to go to sleep, because he's clearly not. I think he might have been a year old or so. And it was exactly the experience you described. We spent time together. It turned out to be a wonderful night, which I remember very well. I had long since forgotten what the important meeting was the next day, or whether I got through it or how that worked out. But that evening became an important thing for me, and I made me aware of how important it was to spend time with my kids. And only years later now am I discovering that there's a lot of science to back that up too. So you were a little bit ahead of the research, Nick.
Yeah, thanks, Nick, for the call. You also write about the influence a father has on a teenage girl's likelihood of getting pregnant. Well, what is that influence?
Well, this is So fathers contribute a lot of good things to their children, and so when fathers are absent, some of those things are missing too. So there are a number of things I have in the book that speak to this point. But the one that I thought really captured it is that in families with mothers and fathers in the house, teenage girls, develop normally. There's a range of age at which they enter puberty and a whole series of things, social competence and various kinds of important developments are going on in adolescence. And it turns out when a father is not in the home, that process gets disrupted. Now, I'm going to say something in a minute about, you know, the risks that those girls face. But before we even get into the sort of social science and psychology, if a father is not present in the house, there's some dramatic biology that occurs. And that is teenage girls, young girls, daughters go into puberty significantly earlier than they would if their fathers were present. Now, this is puberty is one of the huge life transitions that we all go through. And the idea that this biological process, which is so primal in our bodies, would be affected merely by the absence of a father, I thought was stunning.
I think it is, too. I mean, we hear about women synchronizing menstrual cycles if they're just, you know, just women together, for instance, in
right.
a college dorm room or something like that. But not that. So it's are male hormones somehow delaying puberty?
Well, it's unclear exactly why this happens, but one thought is that males are releasing pheromones, or, you know, that their scent when they're nearby affects the girls. The girls certainly aren't aware of the transition to puberty. They're not doing anything
right.
to speed it up. It's not possible. It's biology. The problem with this, the further problem with this, to get into the social and psychological aspects, is that girls who enter puberty earlier are also at increased risk of having risky sexual behavior. They're also at increased risk of becoming pregnant as teens. So the absence of a father, first of all, has this fundamental biological effect on a girl, and then has, you know, some very difficult social situations. You know, we know teenage girls with children, you know, have a difficult road to kind of get established as adults. And so, you know, the absence of a father is very important in this regard.
Yeah. So it's more than just dad is there to scare the boyfriend straight.
Well, that might explain, you know, risky sexual behavior. It doesn't explain entering puberty earlier. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the interesting piece of it. You know, nothing a father says or does is going to affect what a young girl's body does.
Right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Sean in Fond du Lac is with us. Hello, Sean.
Hi. Great program. Well, I guess I'd like to back up in the conversation a little bit. I am an older father. I had my second marriage at 39. Mom is about the same age. And my question is, has there been any research on older fathers, or maybe it's just fathers in general that are present and active in the family? My wife tends to think I'm a little overprotective, and I don't let my son make enough messes and mistakes and things like that. Is that just something in my personality, or is that just because I'm older and, you know, kind of just maybe I should, I don't know. I wonder if I should stand back and let the process happen a little more natural, or, you know, is my intervening, you know, hurting him?
Wait a minute, Sean, you have to tell us who is cooing in the background just now.
Ah, that's my son.
How old is he?
He just turned two.
Yeah. So we talked earlier in the program about some of the medical risks associated with being an older father. But in terms of father's behavior, I have to say I'm like you. I see my kids climbing on the jungle gym or something, and I want to be all over them. And because I'm envisioning all kinds of terrible falls and all sorts of things. I didn't come across research that suggests that is more common in older fathers. Certainly, it's obviously a aspect of personality. Some of us are more risk averse than others, and we tend to reflect that with our kids. But you know, what I did mention, I think briefly earlier, was that, you know, older fathers sometimes are a little more established, more financially set, and able to spend a little more time with their kids, and that's clearly important. So, you point out something else that the research shows, is that in general, fathers are not as much like you and me, but they do tend to let their kids climb a little higher on the jungle gym and climb up the fence and bounce around and run around. And it's clear from research that observing families that fathers let kids do more along those lines than mothers do. And that's thought to be good for kids. Because it helps them, you know, adjust to these kinds of things to learn how to function in a somewhat higher risk environment. So I try to curb that. That's the science piece. The personal piece is I try to be careful about hovering over my kids too much, because I know that exploring and taking a few little risks is good to them.
Thank you, Sean, and good luck. Chris in Milwaukee called in to say there are plenty of single fathers, too. What is missing from a child's development if they only have a father raising them?
Well, that's a very good question, and I actually didn't look at that terribly closely. That would be a book on mothers' contributions to their kids, which I do, you know, I do mention from time to time, and we talk about mothers and language and so forth, but I didn't look at that closely. Clearly, a lot of these things that happen, you know, if you have a single father, a lot of the things that fathers do will still happen. Fathers will be able to contribute those things. One obvious point that any single parent would know far better than I is that, you know, it's a lot of work being a single parent. You don't have somebody else to help get the kids to camp or, you know, to school or home from school and a thousand other things that we all have to do. So that's an issue. But I do know that research shows that in gay families, whether it's two fathers or two mothers, there's a considerable body of research now that shows that, you know, those kids grow up fine and healthy and happy, and there's no detriment to having two mothers or two fathers. And that raises the question, you know, what, you know, if you have a family with two mothers, what happens to the things that in other families would be contributed by fathers? And I'm not aware of any research that's looked closely at that yet. But I think, you know, I really think these fathers, these families with two moms or two dads are going to teach us a lot about family structure, because it's a very different thing. And there are enough of them now that researchers can begin to study them and their kids and how they operate.
Yeah, so how much of this do you how much do you think these research findings apply to fathers specifically, as opposed to the brother or the uncle, or maybe even the second parent, as long as there is, you know, a second male involved with the child's life?
Well, what I tried to do in the book, because I specifically wanted to look at fathers' contributions, was to look at things in particular that fathers contributed uniquely to their children. So I didn't look as much at what mothers do. I don't know of any research, you know, I don't know if you could find enough families with single mothers and a brother very involved with the kids. You know, single mothers work out all kinds of different arrangements. And if you wanted to study 100 single mother families in which the brother was deeply involved with the kids and lived next door, you'd have trouble finding that many. So I don't know of any research that looks at it at that level. Clearly, you know, fathers contribute important things, but there, you know, there are, in terms of the many, many aspects of parenting that parents share, you know, many of those are not dependent on gender, as you're right about that. So, you know, having a warm relationship with the kids is important for both parents. Spending time with the kids is important for both parents. But I found those things, you know, not so surprising. I think we all sort of feel that's true. And so the question was, what are the things that fathers do that are uniquely important that we haven't realized? And so I filled the book with as many of those as I could find.
Well, we are talking about the contributions of fathers that are perhaps overlooked, underappreciated, not even known. And we are welcoming your questions about the science of fatherhood. Our guest is Paul Rayburn. He's a science writer, and he is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. So what effect did your father have on who you are today? We are talking with Paul Rayburn. He is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. And we're welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Bobby in Trempealeau, who's been waiting. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. My question is, and Joy, you touched on it just a little bit there about having another male besides a paternal father in the home as related to the pheromones and the putting off of the puberty. And I was wondering if also the age of the father had an impact on that, if it would be less of an effect on delaying the puberty of the daughter.
Well, let me just, I mean, maybe, is there anything specifically that says it has to be the biological father, or if any male is in the household when a girl is developing, Paul?
Well, the research was done with, in families where the father was not present. I think they look for families, without a male present, because that would be complicated if you had some families with an absent father and a male involved, and some families with an absent father and no male involved. I think, this is a pretty new finding to show that if the father is absent, the daughter faces these risks. So whether somebody will do further research on, another male figure, I don't know. But as I was saying earlier with single mothers, it's difficult. You can look at families with a father present and a father absent and do some research and discover some things. It's hard to find a number of similar families with a non-father male figure in the family, to find enough of them that are alike enough to be able to do any comparisons and make any conclusions.
Does science in any of the studies you've looked at show that a father's presence can be harmful?
No, except with the obvious exception that we all know about, which is abusive fathers, where clearly a father's presence can be harmful. And again, that was something I just didn't look at because that's a very important problem. A lot has been written about that, and I thought that would just take over this book and be a book of its own. So yes, an abusive father clearly can do damage. But short of an abusive father, and abuse comes in a lot of forms. It comes in physical and emotional forms, so it's not always blatantly obvious. But short of that, no, I think, we talked about older fathers and some health risks associated with that. But no, there's nothing I found that would suggest that a well-adjusted father would do anything harmful to his kids.
Mark in Watertown is with us. Hello, Mark.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for calling.
I have a bit of an anecdote. As I look back on how I was raised, I have really constant emotions and feelings about my mother. I mean, she was always kind of the force of unconditional love and understanding throughout my whole development, really. But then when I look back on my father, throughout the years, it changes wildly. I mean, it started out very strict and almost dictatorship-like, and toward the end, it was almost leader and best friend. And looking back, I'm not sure if he was the one changing or if I was the one changing. I was wondering if anybody ever did any research on a long-term study on children's emotions toward each parent and how that changes over the years.
Interesting. I bet you there hasn't been that study, but isn't that interesting, Paul?
Yeah, it is. And you're right, Joy. I don't know of any study that addresses that in particular, but that's exactly the kind of anecdote. We all walk around with those kinds of things in our heads about our parents. And that's exactly the kind of thing that prompted me to write the book. So in this case, I don't have a good answer about, concerning research that shows how emotional aspects of a relationship could change over time. But with many of those kinds of things that we think are true, I was able to find research that, would explain whether they are in fact true or not. And I think many of us walk around with ideas in our heads about our fathers, and not all of those are correct, or not all of those are borne out by research. So that's exactly what I was trying to do. Things I think about my father, is that really right, or is that just my sort of emotional reaction that leads me to think something that's probably not necessarily true?
Mm-hmm. We've talked about a lot of amazing research that we may not have been familiar with, and different effects fathers have on their children, from you know, from the older father to delaying puberty to all sorts of things. What else surprised you from your research, from the science of fatherhood?
Well, there are a lot of, you know, there are any number of things. I mean, actually, you were asking a few minutes ago about harmful effects of fathers. There are some things that fathers, if they don't take care of themselves, they can do a little bit of harm to their children. And one example that I forgot to mention at that point was that fathers who are obese, their kids, like during pregnancy, their kids have a 60% increase in risk of low birth weight. Now, figure that out. It doesn't matter whether the mother is obese or not, but if the father is obese during pregnancy, kids will have a higher risk of, health problems themselves, lower birth weight, which is a very, very important health problem. There are other things, too, that, you know, fathers, I'm sorry to go back to pregnancy, I should have mentioned these things earlier, but fathers, when fathers are not around during pregnancy, those kids have four times higher death rates than kids whose fathers are around. If fathers are depressed during pregnancy, their children have an increased risk of depression or psychiatric problems through their lifetime, even as adults. On the other side, you know, as some of the callers have suggested, you know, some of the things we do are in fact right. They're borne out by the research. So children whose fathers play with them, read to them, take them on school outings when they can, help care for them, those kids have fewer behavioral problems in elementary school and more risk of delinquency as adolescents. So it just goes on and on. And there's so many things, even in an hour, which you've been nice enough to give me to talk about the book, we only scratched the surface. But so many things that just show this incredibly powerful connection between fathers and their kids.
We go to Jack in Milwaukee next. Hello, Jack.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I called because I have four children, and I was a stay-at-home dad for 12 years. And their mother divorced me as soon as the youngest got into elementary school. And the first three had a very large appreciation for rules and laws, and the last one didn't. And I found out last fall, committed a felony in drug possession, and it really saddened me to see that. But she was the most affected because she had the largest distance from her dad after the divorce, because, of course, Wisconsin's a mother state. So even though I was the primary caregiver, it was determined that they would be better off with their mother, who was not at home most of the time.
We will talk about that, Jack, but I want to make sure I understand your story correctly. The three older children had your influence growing up more so than the fourth child. Yeah, the youngest child.
Right, right. Yeah. And I was wondering, I always had this, I've been using this expression of the child that grows up without a dad has what I call a daddy hole, a hole inside of them that can never be filled up by anyone other than the person who's really their father. And that can't be, that place is difficult to fill by anyone else, brother, uncle, second husband, anyone else. I was wondering what you thought about that, as well as the rule thing.
Well, we just talked about, actually, that, you know, the children whose fathers play with them, read to them, take them on outings, have fewer behavioral problems, lower likelihood of delinquency. Obviously, a father's don't spend as much time with the kids or aren't around, they can't play with them and read to them nearly as much. Now, these are statistical things that researchers develop by looking at a large number of families. So, you know, we can't look at you and your son. I mean, somebody could if they, you know, a therapist, say, spent a lot of time with your family. But the kinds of studies I'm talking about, you know, do not enable you to say, well, it's because, you know, of the divorce and because I wasn't around as much that, you know, one of my kids had problems. There's so many emotional things, as you know very well, that go along with divorce, and all of that stress and emotional anxiety can affect kids too. So it's hard in a single case to sort out exactly what's going on. And in fact, that is what therapists try to do to help people. But clearly, you know, fathers spending time with their kids is important in all these ways we talked about. It also, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about, fathers spending time with kids is good for fathers. So, you know, fathers, we talked about a drop in testosterone during pregnancy, during our partner's pregnancy. Fathers who play with their kids a lot have lower levels of testosterone and presumably are more nurturing and more able to connect emotionally and so forth. So if fathers are not able to spend very much time with their children, these things are not going to happen.
I'm wondering, too, if what you learned in your research on the research of fatherhood, if you have anything to say about courts that maybe favor women in terms of child custody and that sort of thing. Our caller alluded to that.
Yeah, well, I didn't write too much about that. In the afterword of the book, I noted that what I think is very important is that I think family divorce lawyers, family court judges, custody evaluators, all of these people, I wish I knew a wealthy person who would, you know, buy copies of the books for, you know, the family court judges across the country and divorce lawyers and people who are involved with kids, because those folks do not even come close to recognizing how important fathers are for kids. And if they did, the reason we know that is because if they did, they wouldn't make the decisions they do. You know, I saw one case recently of a father who was awarded custody of the kids for 2 months during the summer, and the mother had them all the rest of the year. That's not enough time for fathers to make the contributions they really need to make. The kids are going to suffer. You know, 1 weekend a month, 2 weekends a month, that's not enough time. So I think anybody who reads this book will understand in a very profound way, I hope, how important it is for kids to spend time with their fathers and how wrong so many of the courts are to just rubber stamp, you know, mother's custody, even in situations where, you know, they're very difficult. It's often the presumption that the mother's the better parent. I tell one story in the book of a judge some years ago in Michigan who, you know, father made a plea for custody, and the judge literally said, you know, I vomit on this request. I cannot believe that, you know, the mother is not the best parent for the child. That didn't strike me as an opinion based on science and rational inquiry, to say the least.
So in our final minute or so, I wish we had more time, lots of callers still, but how would knowing more about why fathers matter and what you know so far, how does this help families today?
Well, my feeling is that Do Fathers Matter is a resource. So it has lots of things in it. And every parent or father will pick the things from it that they think is important to them. So in my case, I tend to be a little bit stern as a father. That's my normal temperament. And after looking at the research on how important it is for fathers to be emotionally engaged and have a warm relationship with their kids, I really work harder now to curb that. So others would find other things. But, you know, I make my living this way. I'm trying to sell books to buy shoes for my kids. But I really did the book because I hope it will be a service for people and that people will take a look and, you know, and become better fathers. That's what we're all trying to do.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Paul Rayburn is a science writer contributing to the New York Times, Discover, Scientific and American, the Huffington Post. He writes about fathers, a blog for Psychology Today, and is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We've Overlooked. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Justin Williams for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I also hope that you join us tomorrow. It's On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will share advice on loans, retirement, savings, and will answer your personal finance questions. It's On Your Money tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.